Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. It's an opportunity for us to have a special discussion, a spiritual discussion that's geared toward either spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And it's wonderful to have different guests on the show. And today I am delighted to have back on my show, Carrie Richardson. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, Willa. So good to be here again.
Oh, yeah. We had a great time. Last time we talked about clearing spiritual clutter. I know people got a lot out of that. And now that it's springtime, people definitely have that on the mind, and they're very aware of the nicer weather. We got to get moving and get moving. And I think this is going to be a great show for them today. Before we get into more of this, I wanted to make sure everybody knows you can tune in on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, for the live show, and also look at the archive videos. I encourage you to look back at the past show that Carrie and I did called Clearing Spiritual Clutter, so you can get the most out of this particular topic. It's also on my YouTube channel. You can find things there. And this also goes out on blogtalkradio.com/LilyDaleRadio. I'm part of the Lily Dale Radio family. And so there's a weekly symposium of shows that happens that you can access and listen to at your leisure or listen to live. And so today, as I said, Carrie's my guest. And Carrie is a very special lady. She's a best-selling author of What Your Clutter is Trying to Tell You, and also another book, From Clutter to Clarity. Carrie is a mindset coach, and I like to tease her about being a clutter coach, and she says, I am actually the clutter whisperer. And so if you need a clutter whisperer in your life, Carrie is an excellent person to have on board. I know last time we talked about things, you talked about your background and how you worked as in journalism, as magazine editor, and had done such wonderful work in that arena and helping people, that you started to take the step into helping people in a particular way, coaching them through what needed to happen in their lives so that they can move past obstacles. And many times the clutter that's physically in our life can be an obstacle. And our topic today, I think, is really going to help the people who want to take things to the next level, is the spiritual messages in your clutter. So Carrie's going to decode that for us today. Yeah, I'm sure she has a whole hierarchy of how to understand this, and I'm going to let her go.
It's interesting because when people think of clutter, they just think of physical piles. And yes, of course, that's like the most default type of clutter when we think about like our pantry or our closets or our desk or all that kind of stuff. And if you have clutter in your life, and I define clutter as anything that gets in the way of you living your best life, and the deepest forms of clutter are spiritual, or the physical clutter that we see has a spiritual message for us, particularly that clutter that you struggle to clear. So let's say that you have things that you know you want to get rid of, that you know you're done with, but you just struggle to actually follow through. There's a spiritual message in that clutter for you. It's like there's this cord that's attached to it that's making it difficult for you to complete the job. And that's where the real opportunity lies, is you can go, okay, what is my spirit trying to communicate to me through this stubborn clutter that I dream about being gone, but I can't seem to make it happen?
So how do we do that then?
So when you think about I'll give you a quick like shortcut.
Okay.
If you are struggling to get rid of any kind of clutter, physical, mental, emotional, and you think to yourself, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to finally do X, and that time comes, pay attention to how you talk yourself out of actually doing it. What is the language you're using to talk yourself out of cleaning off that desk or cleaning out that closet? It's language, usually something along the lines of, oh my God, this is going to take me forever. I don't even know what to do with all this stuff. How did it even get this bad? Where do I even begin? Right? So these are the common things we say to ourselves when we're struggling to get going on any project, clutter clearing or otherwise. So now I want you to dissect those statements. So if you say things like, oh my God, how did I let it get this bad? That right there tells me that there's shame, there's a shame cord attached to that clutter. There's very likely limiting beliefs that are connecting you to that clutter, that there's deeper soul clutter to work on. It's not about the pile that you can't get rid of, but it's about the story you're telling yourself about yourself in regards to that pile. It's the meaning that you've assigned to the items. Well, I can't get rid of that. Someone gave that to me as a gift. Like, how crappy would that be? Okay. So there's a story you're telling yourself. Like, would it make you a bad, ungrateful person if you chose to donate that gift that someone gave you? So by all means, keep it when you don't really love, need, or use it. So if you are struggling to let go of something out of guilt, out of obligation, out of a story that you're telling yourself, I want you to pay attention to where else in your life are you living by that same story? Mm-hmm. It's limiting you elsewhere, not just with the getting rid of the clutter. That's the spiritual message. It's like, wow. You know, as the saying goes, how we do anything is how we do everything, right? So if we struggle to clear thoughts, things, or people that no longer serve us, we are benefiting in some way by keeping that clutter. And it's like, wait a minute, but I don't want that toxic friend anymore. I don't want to be talking badly about myself when I look in the mirror anymore. I don't want that sack of paperwork to be greeting me every time I step into my office anymore. Okay, I hear you that you don't want those things in your life, but if you're not taking action to actually remove them, then you're benefiting more by them staying put. And it's figuring out how are you benefiting more.
Mm-hmm. So you're essentially enabling bad behavior, but you're also self-sabotage is so strong. And you want to stay in a negative circumstance because you at least know what to expect. There's some level of comfort in keeping the status quo rather than moving forward.
Yes.
And it's who will I have to be then? What will my expectations be upon myself, or what others will have as far as their expectations?
Exactly. Yes. So that's, you hit the nail on the head. So it is more comfortable to stay with what we know than what we don't know. And for all of those examples, like some of those examples that you gave, like, gosh, if I'm finally able to do this, what else might I be able to do? And that can be scary. Or if I'm finally able to do this, will I beat myself up for not doing it sooner? Like, why did I wait so long? Like, how often do we say that? We do it when we're ready. And so the pain has to get greater than the fear for us to make a change. The discomfort with living the way we're living has to exceed the fear of the unknown before we'll make a change. Mm-hmm. And so we can expedite that process, because if you really think about it, even that phrase, right, the fear of the unknown, there's no such thing. You can't fear the unknown. You don't know what it is. How can you fear it? The real fear is that you can't handle the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have something to work on, right? There's that soul clutter.
Yes.
It's like, oh, if I'm afraid that I can't handle what I don't know, how can I work on shoring up my self-confidence? How can I become more resourceful? How can I get better at asking for help? Mm-hmm. Right? So there's lots of ways that you can prepare for the unknown. Then it becomes much less scary. Mm-hmm. Then you're much more likely to clear the clutter that's in your way of getting to the unknown.
So once people get to that point of recognition of what their particular spiritual clutter and need is, then how quickly can it work for them?
You know, it's amazing how quickly it can work because, and here's the caveat in that, it's shifting your mindset to remember that your success, that feeling that you think only comes at the finish line, mm-hmm. actually comes with every action step you take. So your success is in the action, not the outcome. Mm. So you don't have to look at a project you want to complete or a clutter that you want to clear or whatever it might be as, I'm not going to get relief until it's totally done. It's not true. Think of it this way, like, think about how much better you feel after going for that walk then not going for the walk, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't have to wait until you had 365 walks under your belt. You didn't have to wait until you lost those 20 or 30 pounds. You felt better just by going for that 20-minute walk. So there's the concrete example of successes in the action. It's in the doing. So that's why I'll tell my clients often, let's look at this thing that you've been avoiding, this clutter that you've been avoiding clearing, this boundary that you haven't been setting, whatever it might be, and let's break it down to teeny tiny small steps that you can take right away. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean when I say you can get started on it really quickly, because it's not about finishing. Finishing anything is about getting good at getting started. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on creating a habit Yes. of getting started. Then you will inevitably finish. If you start enough, you're going to finish. Right. Yeah. So let's focus more on the starting. I do that with people. You know, I love the Pomodoro technique. I think we talked about this the last time as well. It's just a time management tool of 25-minute rounds. I didn't create it. I just happen to love it. It works really well for me and my kind of scattered brain. I'm a right brain creative. So it takes work for me to be methodical and strategic. The Pomodoro rounds help a lot with that. It helps a lot with my clients who are struggling with getting started on anything. You just pick a task that you've been procrastinating on. You sit down at that task, whatever it might be, and it might be going for that walk. It doesn't matter. But you eliminate as many distractions as possible. So you don't want your email chiming or your phone dinging or people in your home interrupting you. And you set a timer for 25 minutes and you get to work. Now, when I say get to work, because that doesn't magically remove the resistance, right? Just because you set a timer. Sometimes the first clutter we need to clear is our resistance. So that 25 minutes, 15 minutes of it might be spent you writing about how much you don't want to be doing what you're doing. Or you can be griping or groaning or like, this sucks. I wish I didn't have to do this. Why did it take so long? That's fine. That's still working on the task. Right. So getting started can look very different than what we think. It's not just about shredding that pile of paper. It's first sitting. Maybe you're doing an energy grounding exercise to get yourself present and centered. That might be 5 minutes or so. That's part of the Pomodoro round. Now, there's the resistant part of you is going to work really hard at talking you out of following through. Right? But that's the challenge. Stay put for that 25 minutes. You can look at the timer all you want and go, nope, I know I want to quit, but I've got 16 minutes left. I've got 9 minutes left. And you just challenge yourself to stay put. I don't care if you're not actually working on the task. Don't move. Stay in that spot. Because again, you could be working on clearing the resistance. You're teaching yourself that you do have the ability to follow through despite what past evidence has shown you.
So it's like, hold the line.
Mm-hmm.
Don't break, hold the line.
Yes.
As much as you want to go look at that phone, as much as you want to, think about something else, stay mm-hmm. focused.
Stay focused.
That, in that moment of the now, that being space.
Yes. Yes.
That happens.
Yes. And it's okay. While the traditional Pomodoro rounds are 25 minutes, I give you full permission to do 10 or 15. Whatever time frame you choose, don't start with 25 minutes on the timer and then quit 10 minutes in.
Right.
Say, you know what? I'm going to try 10 minutes. Set the timer for 10 minutes and stay mm-hmm. put. Set the timer for 15 and stay put. It's getting in the habit of getting started. That's when you get to feel those really quick wins and you're mm-hmm. like, ooh, that tasted pretty good. I want some more. Right. So that's when we can, and that's in those moments when we tap into those spiritual messages of like, oh gosh, as I sit here and resist this task, I'm noticing that I'm feeling this and I'm thinking that. And that's when you start to uncover what mm-hmm. the real spiritual messages are. The cluttered bedroom, while the rest of the house is nice and tidy, is your soul telling you, hey, maybe put yourself first. Don't worry about everybody else all the time and leave yourself last. Right? So that's a spiritual message in bedroom clutter, as an example. Clutter in your office, spiritual messages. There's likely some limiting money beliefs we need you working on. There's confidence we need you strengthening. You might doubt that you have what it takes to succeed in life. That's going to manifest as clutter in your office, right? Mm-hmm. So depending on where your clutter is and what it is, can give you an inkling into what that spiritual message is. And actually, I'll just say this, on my website at carrierichardson.com, if you just join my email community, you'll get a free workbook that is all about those examples. What are the messages? What are the spiritual messages in my clutter? If the clutter's in my car, in my relationships, on my body as weight, in my mind, like what is the deeper spiritual message of that clutter? There's a fun little workbook that you can complete.
Wow. And it'll line people up with the exact spiritual understanding that they need mm-hmm. to tackle at that particular moment.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. And yep. is that something that you have utilized, gained the understanding of your own life? Or is this mm-hmm. as you've been a mindset coach about this, you've been like, oh, this is what I see time and time again with these yeah. clients. This is why that is it your own research, so to speak?
It's both, right? It's in my own life and in my clients' lives, right? I mean, there's a reason that saying exists, that we teach what we need to learn. I've never been a very like a pack rat or a clutter bug. So as far as physical clutter, I don't really have that in my life much at all. But belief clutter, body clutter, my biggest form of clutter that I struggle with is my weight. And yes, I have peeled back those layers over the years of what are the spiritual messages. I have a belief that it's not safe to be vulnerable. And so I wear weight like an armor, like a suit of armor. I have beliefs that it's much more important to help others than help yourself. So I focus all of my attention and focus on others. Now, these are belief layers that I've peeled back over the years that I'm still working on. But it's funny, when you start working on the clutter, you think it's about one thing. You think it's just about like, oh, I just need to eat better and exercise and then everything will be fine. If that's all it was, we would all be at our goal weight and happy. That's not all it is with weight or with any other kind of clutter. So I can know what I need to do to get the result I want. The juicy, good information comes from the, then why aren't I doing it? Mm-hmm. And asking why from a place of curiosity, not a place of shame or self-abuse, because that's not going to get you anywhere. But when I get curious about, isn't that interesting? I know the better choice is this, yet I'm making that. Why might that be? And then we circle back to that whole idea of how am I benefiting from making the unhealthy choice? Mm-hmm. How do I personally benefit from choosing the bagel over the apple, right? It's like, well, from my spiritual messages, that carb in that bagel or the sugar in that muffin is going to numb me out from the uncomfortable feelings that might be surfacing. That apple won't do that, right? So then it's like, oh, okay. So the benefit I'm getting by not clearing the clutter I say I want to clear in this example is that I don't have to feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
Right? So then it's like,
You just keep it under the rug.
Exactly. Yes. It's like when I talk to people who have like office clutter on their desk, and, you know, I've talked to several people where it's either, you know, gosh, I really need to get a new job. I've been out of work for, you know, 6 months and blah, blah. And I'll say, okay, so is the resume ready to go? Have you found opportunities to apply for? Yes. The resume is not finalized. I've got to get my office organized so I can sit down and get that resume done. And I'll be like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, you don't need an organized office to do a resume. So clutter can be a fantastic scapegoat.
Sure.
And so if I say to them, well, you know what, let's not worry about organizing the office right now. Instead, let's zoom right to the resume and see how that goes. Lots of resistance comes up. So they were using the messy office as an excuse to not do the resume, because without the resume, they then can't apply for the job. And we start to unfold out. They say they want a new job, but the last job they had really crappy coworkers and they didn't set boundaries with them and they felt really mistreated. So they're not really eager to jump back into the workforce, but they tell themselves it's because the resume is not done because the office is messy. And it's like, no, actually, what we need to do is work on your boundary setting muscles Mm-hmm. So I work on that with this particular client. We work on his boundary setting muscles. And now suddenly he's like whipping out his resume like it's a piece of cake. And I'm like, because it was never about the resume. It was never about the messy desk. Right? So you just keep peeling back. That's all the spiritual messages underneath it all.
I think it's fascinating because so often the things we don't want to look at, like you said, they show up. They show up in our relationships with the objects and people around us and the spaces that show up. And I think it's wonderful that you have this, you classify things like, this is this, and then it's just so directive. And yet I think that has its benefits, but actually talking it out with somebody like you would have the benefit because you get into those deeper layers, because some people just don't have the self-awareness to recognize what those layers are, even if they were to read them.
Yeah, most of us don't, right? Because we're just too close to our own stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I, refer to myself jokingly, but not as the clutter whisperer, because people come to me and say, gosh, I just can't seem to get my kitchen in order. Or I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about your relationships then. You know, so it's like, the kitchen is the heart of the home. It's where people gather. So yeah, so it's like, I'll do clutter readings for people that they'll come to me with, like, tell me what obstacle is in your way. Well, it's I'm unhappy in my marriage, or this friend is toxic, or, I can't seem to get healthy. Or I'm like, okay, great. So then I do the reading underneath that. It's like, it's almost like I think about when people do psychometry, right? And they'll hold an item and they'll do a reading from holding it. Mm-hmm. It's similar to that, but people will come to me with their clutter item by just telling me what it is, and I will read underneath what the spiritual message is.
Oh, I love it. It's so very cool to know that there are these spiritual messages in the clutter. And I wondered if there was a connection between how long the clutter has been held onto or when the clutter began, in terms of having the nuances of that, like, because there's long-term clutter, there's short-term clutter, but there can be clutter that is like, if you were to actually pinpoint when that clutter began.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be to that point.
It can be telling. Yeah. Yes. So it can be very telling to be like if someone comes to me and says, God, I've never had clutter issues my whole life. And then suddenly, at the age of 50, I just, I find myself surrounded by stuff. Yes. I'm going to want to look at what happened at that time of your life. What changed?
Mm-hmm.
I got married and I moved into my husband's house, and it doesn't feel like mine. And so, all of a sudden she's doing all this online shopping and gathering stuff because she just wants the space to feel like hers. But now she's surrounded just by a bunch of stuff she didn't want. So I want to know, what was a turning point at your life at that time, if anything, versus long held clutter. It can be a couple things. I mean, it can certainly be like a symbolic of a pattern of behavior, which, again, spiritual behavior, right? Like, if you are someone who struggles to set boundaries, there's a really good chance you're going to be surrounded by much more physical items than you want, because they are acting as your boundary, right? You physically are putting up a wall.
I remember you saying last time that you were on the show, you talked about clutter tantrums. That clutter was tantrum of the soul.
Temper tantrum of the soul.
Is that, this qualifies, wouldn't that qualify?
Yes. So if your soul is like, this is, you are not tending to what I really deeply need. And so I'm going to make it so you can't ignore me anymore. Right. So that's that temper tantrum of the soul. So the soul is going to, have you, you're going to gain enough weight that your joints start to ache. Right, as an example, or you're going to have so much physical clutter that you're literally tripping over things, or, you can't put a plate down on the table because there's stuff on it. It's going to continue to get louder, the temper tantrum, which means accumulate until you just can't ignore it anymore. And again, it's until the pain gets greater than the fear. And sometimes it takes a lot of clutter, a lot of mistreatment from other people, a lot of mistreatment of ourselves, a lot of physical stuff to get our attention. Sometimes it has to get our soul has to get really loud. The sooner we can listen to it, the better.
Let's lean into the idea of the defiance. I know when we first started this conversation, you were talking about how people are like, but I don't want to. I don't want to clean this up. The first part of the 20 minutes of the Pomodoro method, that you were like, no, I don't want to. And what it reminded me of is like a little kid. You know, I have children, and at different points in their development, they'd be like, but I don't want to pick that up. Yes, you have to pick up your socks. Yes, you have to pick up your papers. Yes, you have to pick up your toys. I don't want to. So how much of that is like ingrained as a childlike response to things?
Yeah, it's
your clients, would you say?
It's always interesting to look at the different parts of ourselves, the rebel, the rationalizer, the indulger, you know, all those different parts of ourselves and what's at play. So what's a little bit different there is the childlike part that says, I don't want to do that, is being defiant more from a place of wanting to exude independence or have a say in their life, right? Like, I want to have a say. You just keep telling me to do things, and at some point I want to be able to say no. So if there's that childlike defiance that I feel coming up with my clients, that's when I will ask them, like, do you feel like you have a say in your life? Or are you just steamrolled by the people in your life? Do you feel heard? Does your voice matter in your life, in your work, in your relationships, et cetera? So if there is that childlike defiance, that's going to tell me, again, it's boundaries. I talk about under all kinds of clutter, there are three core soul causes. It's limiting beliefs, the need for boundaries, and unrealistic expectations. Those are the three core causes of any kind of clutter: mindset clutter, weight clutter, physical clutter, relationship clutter. It is all caused by those three things, and usually a combination. Limiting beliefs are really, that's the engine behind it all. That drives the struggle to set boundaries. That drives your tendency to have unrealistic expectations for yourself and others. So anything you're really struggling with, we want to peel back the layers to get to what is the belief that is driving this behavior. So if it's the childlike defiance, if it's just the inner rebel, if it's that resistant part that says, well, yeah, that might work for other people, but that's not going to work for me. It's like, okay. So, you know, that kind of like, my situation is special and unique. This won't work for me. It's like, okay, great. So let's explore how you're benefiting by staying stuck.
What are you getting out of that?
People be like, nothing. I don't want this in my life. It's like, well, if you really didn't, it would be gone. So there is some benefit. What is the payout? And so oftentimes a great kind of trick I use when you're procrastinating on anything, whatever it is you say you want to be doing, ask yourself what the next step would be. If I got this step done that I've been procrastinating on, what would be the next thing I would be expecting myself to do? Because 8 or 9 times out of 10, when we're procrastinating, we're not procrastinating the next step. We're procrastinating the next step.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, I know. Like when I was writing my second book, I was dragging my feet big time on writing that book. And it wasn't like, I mean, yes, writing a book is a big project. I wasn't taking it as a project. I was like, just do some notes on this chapter, Carrie. And I was resisting it. So when I kind of turned the light on myself, went, okay, what's the next step? Well, when this book gets written, then it has to go into my editor. Then I have to go back and forth there. Then I have to market it. Then I have to put it out into the world and have people form an opinion and share their opinion on it, right? So my procrastination with getting the book done wasn't about me dragging my feet on writing. It was about dragging my feet because once it's done, right, then what?
Yes.
So, yeah.
What if it's more than I can handle? Yeah. Again, it's back to that.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting to me how people will get so upset. They'll get stuck in their life. If they have planned 5 steps ahead, they're not just disappointed that the first step didn't happen. If something goes, you know, haywire. It's not just about that first step. It's like all five of those steps that they have this disappointment in. But what you're saying is kind of interesting. That's that sense of the self-sabotage, the disappointment of even doing those things preceding them. It's like a, it's an interesting reversal of the energetic disappointment and overwhelm that people have.
Yeah, and this fear of this fear of failure is like, what if I try and it doesn't work? And that's the other thing, that this is might not be, I don't want to say popular opinion, because I don't think it's an unpopular opinion, but I would wager to say that there's no such thing as failure. There's only trying.
Yeah.
Right? So if you do something and it doesn't work out, you might say, well, that failed. It's like, well, no. You tried and now you know more. So the next time you try, you can do something different. And then the next time you try, you can do something different. So there's no failing, there's only trying. We can't know if something's going to work unless we try, right? Mm-hmm. Unless we take that first step. And, you know, because that's a big fear, like, you know, what if I get my whole house organized, or I break up with that person, or I lose all this weight and my life still isn't what I dreamed it would be? Mm-hmm. That's a reason to keep all the clutter, right? It's like, what if? How many eggs are you putting in the basket of your dream life at the other side of this clutter clearing? So you won't know until you try. Take a step. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work out, take a left-hand turn and take another step, and then take a right-hand turn and take another step. Keep going until you will find your way. I mean, as we all know, our spiritual journey is very windy.
Yeah,
it is so not a straight line.
And take people all kinds of places.
All kinds of places, all over the place, right? But just be nice to your younger self and keep your expectations realistic. You know what? Today I'm going to try one Pomodoro round and I'm going to see how it goes. Instead of starting tomorrow, I'm going to do a Pomodoro round every day and I'm going to get this office in shape. Your resistance, who's your scared little child, is going, wait a minute. So you're telling me once we start, we have to do this every day, that I'm just never going to start.
Right.
So it's like, that's the whole approach, like in recovery programs, right? One day at a time. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Like, let's just worry about, what is my next meal going to be? What is my one palm round today going to be? And you know what, kiddo? Like I always call my younger self kiddo. It's like, listen, kiddo, let's do one palm round. And if we never want to do another one, we don't have to. It never happens.
It's like getting a child to try something they don't want to.
Exactly.
Just one bite, just one bite.
And then you never have to have another bite if you don't like it.
That's right.
And then it's like, oh, I think I kind of like that. Great, let's have another bite and see if you really do. Right? So we need to treat ourselves like our children. It's like, okay. Because that part of you who is resisting and fighting against your progress really does not want to sabotage you, even though it feels that way. I call that part of us a loving little liar. She is just this part of ourselves who will make up stories about why we can't do something, not because she really believes it, but she's just scared. You'll know that when the language changes, right? So let's imagine that you wanted to start a blog, right? So if you were afraid of being overwhelmed by the technology, her language is going to be, you don't know the first thing about starting a blog. Like, where would you even begin? Who would even read it? Like, you don't know what you're doing. So let's imagine that you built up some confidence around technology and you knew, right, you knew exactly how to start it. But then you were like hesitant to publish anything because you were afraid what people might think. Her language is going to change. Who do you think you are? Who wants to read what you have to say? You know what? Go ahead, publish it, and everyone's going to just rake you right over the coals. So her language will change. That tells me that she doesn't want to sabotage us. She's communicating to us in a indirect way where your fear lies. She's going to grab your most vulnerable thought. So when you are going, and so this is how you can uncover spiritual messages too, right? When it's, if you're not clearing that desk clutter, if you're not clearing the relationship clutter, the spiritual message is what language is she using to talk you out of doing it? She's pointing to where your fear lies at that moment. And that's what needs your attention from a spiritual place.
I think that's beautiful. And that you know and understand those nuances that you kind of have to work a person to a certain level of clarity. Yeah. And then there's another level of clarity. Mm-hmm. And then there might be a little step back because of the fear again, and then forward to the clarity again. A little bit closer to the light each time.
Yes.
A little bit closer. Yeah.
I mean, it's so much about how we talk about meeting people where they're at. Mm-hmm. We have to meet our inner child where she's at. You know, we can't expect her to do the adult thing. She's just a kid.
I have another question. What about if a group has clutter? Because you have individual clutter, yes. And you have how that can affect a family unit or people who are couples. Mm-hmm. But then you also have group clutter. So is there anything you could maybe we should start with the family level, family or couple level first, and then go to group level, if you don't mind. I think it's when it's not all your clutter.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So people will often ask me, well, what if it's not your clutter? When I had my radio show on Hay House Radio, every single week, one of the callers would say, it's my husband's clutter, or what if the clutter's not yours? And indirectly, the clutter is yours, right? So let's say that your spouse is the clutter bug and you're not, and it drives you crazy. And you ask your spouse all the time, can you please just clean that up? Can you please that? And they don't. So then it becomes about your own boundary clutter. So the two approaches I tell people when the majority of the clutter isn't yours, but is someone else's in the house, the first approach is to up your own clutter clearing game, because the feeling of clarity is very contagious. So you can, even if you don't think you have clutter, you can be just tidying up your spaces. Maybe you're streamlining your bookkeeping system. Maybe whatever it might be, maybe you're cleaning out some old files. That energy is actually contagious. So I have oftentimes heard someone say, yeah, you know, my husband asked me, like, what are you doing differently? You seem to have a pep in your step, or you seem so happy. Well, I've just been cleaning up some clutter. And, or it's not even a conversation. The other person is like, I want some of what they're having. Like, or so you just kind of tag team. It's an energetic, it's kind of like a contact high, right? So it's like, oh, I want some of that. So that's the first approach, step up your own clutter clearing game. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next step is to have a conversation with the person from a place, not from a nagging place of like, oh my God, would you clean up your stuff? But more from a place of, hey, listen, here's how your stuff is affecting me. So it's like, listen, I know you have your stuff and I know you want to keep it. No matter how much I would like you to get rid of it. But let me just share with you like how much that stuff stresses me out. Like it really is impacting my quality of life. So I wondered if we could put our heads together and come up with a plan that works for both of us, right? So then, so you're kind of inviting the other person or other people to become part of a solution team instead of being the culprit.
And that would be ideal.
That would be ideal. And so it's like, so, you know, I'm not saying that's foolproof, but it's like starting to communicate from the source place. It really stresses me out with all of your stuff on the kitchen table all the time. So can we find a place in the house that is yours to keep however you'd like, but the common areas respect everyone's needs.
And then it's, well, I can't have my stuff anywhere but here. None of the rest of the house is mine. And so it amplifies more clutter. Like the person that you gave an example, she moved in, she's 50 years old with her husband, and she's just started buying more and more clutter. So it could it initially, for some people, kick up that?
Yes.
At some point, yes. So then now there's this heightened clutter war going on. Then what happens?
Because
you don't really want a clutter war.
No. So it really depends on how it plays out. But I always guide people to go back and communicate your truth and not the symptom, because that just, you know, saying to someone like, oh my God, look, another package is coming for you. Like those passive aggressive remarks,
those tones.
Those those tones, like that's going to get you nowhere.
Clutter judgment.
Clutter judgment, right? So instead, if it's like, okay, I want to be honest with you, like I get anxiety every time I see the UPS truck pull up because I'm afraid of what's going to be added to this space. So it's like, I'm not judging you for shopping or whatever. It's like, here's how it is affecting me. It's that old thinking that is so important. Communicate from the I space, not the you shop online too much or your office is too messy or look at your side of the bed. It's like, I stress out big time when I look at that dining room table, you know, or your side of the bed or whatever. What can we do as a team here to come up? Like, I'm not going to ask you to live just like me, but you're asking me to live just like you and I can't. So how can we find a middle ground?
So you have individual clutter sessions.
Yeah.
Couples and family clutter sessions.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are interventions that have to be happening.
Almost. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to like kids. Yeah. When it comes to kids, the bottom line is mom and dad are the boss. Mm. And I know it's not always that easy, but that's the bottom line is like, you can have your room, but even your room has to be kept a certain way because you're trying to teach them more than tidiness. You're teaching them respect for items. You're teaching them to value their space. You're teaching them respect for mom and dad. So, so there's no real, I mean, I'm not saying you can't sit down with children who are old enough and have a conversation about how they keep their room impacts you. But that feels less, it's like, listen, clean your room.
There are spiritual messages in clutter, in your clutter, but there are also spiritual messages in other people's clutter. And so I don't think that you would necessarily recommend that people go and get your free workbook and then go, and you have yours, this is yours and your spiritual, this is your spiritual problem with your clutter. We're not advising that at all.
Just no
disclaimer.
Take care of your side of the street only.
There we go.
Like you cannot. It's got to be about take care of your own stuff, and that will inspire others to do the same.
Yeah, you want to be the best example that you can without being superior.
Exactly. Exactly. Bingo.
Because I can imagine that once somebody starts getting clutter, it's like when people in a couple unit start getting fit and the other one's not.
Yes.
It's like that with the clutter, or if somebody's really on their spiritual journey, they're taking classes and reading books.
Yes.
And their partner is not. And then, so there are those dynamics that show up, and clutter is certainly a big part of that world. I had another thought. Where does renovation go into that? Because renovation is one of the big reasons that people have problems in their marriages, and that because that causes a lot of clutter. And even
renovation is
temporary.
Renovation is a nightmare. I mean, it's with renovation, you do just have to rest on the fact that it is temporary. I mean, I've been in homes with renovations, and as you can imagine, it drives me bananas. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I will be like sweeping up the sawdust around all the construction materials just because it's like I need to have some semblance here of things being orderly. But renovation clutter is just that. It's going to be temporary clutter. You can certainly, you know, if you have, you know, a construction team working at your home, you can lay expectations out for them as part of your boundaries. Like, please clean up the work site at the end of every day. Don't leave empty coffee cups on the property when you're done. Like, totally fine. Like, set those expectations, set those boundaries, but also keep things realistic, knowing it's a renovation site. It's going to be messy, but it's also going to end.
Yeah. So I mentioned that because Lilydale is going through a huge construction project that's happening on all of our roads at this point. And so there's a lot of mud. There's a clutter of mud that accumulates.
Yeah, so cleaning up and smudging. You know, it's stirring up so much energy, I would smudge.
Smudge
that renovation energy out of there.
Oh, I love it. This is really cool to explore these ideas and concepts with you of how there are these spiritual messages of clutter. Mm-hmm. And so when people, let's say they inherit or they purchase a house that has a bunch of clutter in it, and they can feel the energy of other people's clutter left behind. Do you advise that they smudge in that space?
Yeah, I really do. I would, you know, if you purchase a home or inherit some stuff, even if it's inheriting stuff from people you love, it feels very respectful to me to smudge for yourself and for the other people, because you don't want to get energetically entangled in an unhealthy way. You can live in harmony with, say, the stuff you inherited, should you choose to keep it. But if you buy a home and it has clutter in it, I would want that completely cleared out, and I would smudge. And that's just to say goodbye to the previous owners and open the space up energetically for yourself. We want to keep things energetically tidy.
A lot of my viewers tend to be sensitives themselves, and they can get themselves easily into other people's energy. And as sensitives, we tend to amplify or magnify the energy that's around us. And we need to be cognizant of how sometimes other people's clutter has become something we've assimilated upon ourselves.
Yeah. So I also always recommend any kind of like releasing type rituals that you can do for yourself, right? Like when I work with clients, because I'm a container for their energy, right? I'm holding space for them, and we're working through some difficult stuff. I have to regularly release and relieve myself of their energy. I don't want to interrupt their spiritual journey by hanging on to it. And I don't want to like burn myself out. And so whatever practice you can do to release other people's energies. And I feel like it's important to know that you're releasing the energy for their highest good and yours. It's not like you're throwing it away, right? So I often envision, like for me at the end of the day, for some reason, this is just always the image I've chosen. It's like a white gift box with a ribbon around it. And so I imagine the lid coming off and like white balloons and beautiful bright light pouring out of it and up. And so that's me releasing the energy of everyone I held space for that day. So I release it up to their best and highest good. And then my box is now open and available for the next group.
And I think that's going to hit home for a lot of people, especially if they are mediums, healers, or other kinds of life coaches or practitioners that have to hold space for other people, counselors. A lot of the professions out there that they have to deal with the energetic clutter that's coming their way and how to handle it, because you can almost feel a thickness in the energy and in the air around you when that goes on. So I love that imagery that you shared with us. It really started, it's a joyful release. I really admire about your particular technique. It's a joyful release. Almost like a celebration of, and it's a farewell.
Yes. It's like a spiritual graduation. It's like fly, you're free. Like, you know, leave the nest and you have your wings kind of thing.
So when somebody has been one of your clutter clients, do they kind of get to that place of, I'm ready now, I can celebrate, and it's a farewell. I've learned what I needed to from the master.
It really depends on the person, right? Like I have some people who, after we lay a good foundation for them and get them to really understand the spiritual messages in their clutter, they can then take that knowledge and apply it to any future clutter, because I'm sorry to say none of us will ever be clutter-free completely. But that's okay, because we're always spiritually growing and evolving. So we want to identify the clutter, the beliefs, the things that are in our way, so we can graduate again spiritually to the next level. So some people can take the tools that we work on, the belief flipping exercises, the listening to the messages and the mess approaches, and apply them moving forward. Other people really like to have a consistent ongoing support and check-in. And that's why That's why I created my membership community, Clutter Clear Your Life. It's a place where people can just come and they can learn from me on an ongoing basis, and I can hold space for them, and we have power palms every Monday. That's my Pomodoro round. So every Monday, my group comes together and we plan our most productive weeks. And then together, I set a timer for 25 minutes, and everyone goes off and does a power palm. And we talk about like what came up for you as you went to do that before, during, and after. And then I coach them through those challenges. So it depends on the type of person. Some people like that individual intensive approach. Other people love to be in a community of like-minded trailblazers, and they'll come into the membership community.
It's kind of like, it's a little bit of the Mary Poppins, let's clean up the nursery, right?
Yeah.
And so in that sense, you're going, okay, everybody go clean up the nursery. And then,
yeah.
And they like it that they're not alone in that experience. I can imagine.
They're not alone.
You know, I think especially if you think you're the only one clearing your clutter, it kind of feels overwhelming. But if you know, like, other people are cleaning up too, there's that vibration of, I'm taking part in this. We're all doing this together. There's a tribal mode that you can enter into with that.
Yeah, there's a beautiful,
really clever.
It's really beautiful. So I'll encourage people like to type in the chat, what are you going to be working on during your palm session? And then, you know, and I tell them like, use the power of the group. So pick something that you would otherwise avoid, procrastinate on, dread doing, like use the power of the group to do it, because we have that energetic container for you. They go off. Some people make, you know, challenging phone calls, or, you know, get a lot of people right now are doing tax prep, right? So they're doing tax stuff on their power palms. Some people are cleaning up their office space. You know, I'm going to write those emails I've been meaning to write. So we just hold space for them. And then at the end of it, I'm like, all right, let's celebrate. Put in the chat what you got done during this. And what did you learn spiritually about what came up for you? So it's a beautiful way to leverage the power of the group.
Yeah, the group consciousness and being in that excitement together. And then it's almost like a, I guess in this case, it would be more of a technological high five.
Yes.
Have at the end, that someone is acknowledging the fact that they cleared clutter, because on your own, if you clear clutter, you're like, yay.
maybe you post a picture on Instagram and it's like, look what I did today. But it's not the same.
Everybody's like, they're some people thrive with the group mentality and the competitive mentality. You know, like when kids are in a group with a teacher, they want to please the teacher. Let's see if I can do this better, faster. Look how many I picked up, Miss Richardson.
Yeah, right. Look what I did. Yeah.
it's the teacher.
You want to make teacher proud? Yeah.
Yes, I think it's really cute. I can see how that would work.
Yeah,
it would work on me.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah,
it's fun. People enjoy it.
Well, yeah. I know time's going by so fast. What other tips and techniques would you want to share with us?
Those would be the big takeaways, is, you know, have realistic expectations, get in the habit of getting good at getting started, and know that your resistance is often the first type of clutter you need to clear. Hold space for it, listen to what it wants to tell you, because that's going to really point to those spiritual messages that are buried underneath the stuff. If you have stuff that you want to get rid of, thoughts, things, or people, but you struggle to do so, listen for those deeper spiritual messages of like, how am I benefiting from keeping this thought, thing, or person in my life, even though I know they're no longer serving me? Mm-hmm. So the main takeaways would be compassion and curiosity are your best friends. Mm-hmm. Use intrigue, because clutter can be a powerful catalyst for change in your life when you leverage it in this unique way.
I think it's amazing. And I'm glad that you've decoded that for us, and that people can have this as a resource if they want to build on it further. But I think you probably inspired a lot of people to do some palm sessions.
Good. Hope so. Like,
right after this, they might feel so.
Go do it. Set a timer, 25 minutes, go.
25 minutes. Yeah. And that's like I just think it's fascinating that it's 25 minutes and that's like the magic number. I mean, it's less than a half hour. It doesn't feel like it should be. too overwhelming. I think it's a perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been great, Carrie. Really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah.
I encourage people to check out your website, which is carrierichardson.com, so that they can really enjoy and learn more from you in this regard. And it's beautiful that you've brought this all together in a nutshell for us, and that people can really find those spiritual messages in their clutter and free themselves from whatever is holding them back, so they can be living their best life in the here and feel alignment with their divine purpose. They'll have more time to do what they love to do if they're tied up energetically with stuff or people or things that are no longer necessary in the life. Thank you everyone for tuning in today, and look forward to seeing you next week on Wednesdays with Willa. Bye-bye everyone.